Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. It is a post-game edition, and Ari Wasserman, I think that we may just have to play. I think we need to play this now. The reggaeton horn of chaos must be played. We're going to play it one more time because, I mean, I know you may not think we're there, but we are reggaeton horn of chaos ready right now. It's been one of those days. So one more time, we're going to play it again. All right, the reggaeton horn of chaos. You heard it here first. This has been quite a day. And not just because the place where I live, things are going to get really interesting, but you had undefeated Wake Forest go down. You had undefeated Michigan State go down. You had Ohio State and Alabama and Cincinnati all win squeakers. You had Florida get blown out by South Carolina. And what does that mean for their coaching situation? You had Tennessee win a shootout against Kentucky. You had team academically prowess get academically prowessed into a safety when they might have still had a chance to win the game because their coach, I guess, gave up on them and didn't think they had a chance to win. Ari, how else do you explain Jimmy Lake punting on? It's 4th and 10. They're deep in their own territory, but they had to try to score to win the game. They were down 8 points.
Jimmy Lake and Scott Frost should get together for a beer this weekend at some point and talk about how awesome it is to give up on their own teams on their home field against top 10 opponents by sending a kicker onto the field when they shouldn't.
Now the Frost one, you take issue with him kicking a field goal when they're down 23-17. I took more issue with throwing on third down there when you're running well, when your quarterback just
because he probably knew he was going to kick a field goal, which is the problem.
Exactly. And so I don't know. The Lake one bothers me more than the Frost one because at least, the Frost one was a makeable field goal at least. And it wasn't like Ohio State was scoring with any sort of consistency.
Isn't Nebraska's field goal kicker like 500 on the year?
They've missed a lot. That's true.
That's the other thing too. It's just Ohio State is up 6. They're giving you a chance to win. Nebraska moved the ball down the field, got into the red zone, had a third and manageable, passed it, didn't get it, then kicked a field goal and missed for the second time in the game. And it's just like Ohio State was susceptible to lose. And I believe in my heart, Andy, that if they go for it and they score a touchdown there, Ohio State's in trouble. And you're a Nebraska team that has had its ups and downs, mostly downs this year. You have a chance to get a signature win, the most important win, absolutely, of Scott Frost's short tenure or long tenure at Nebraska, and you send your kicker onto the field and let Ohio State's offense come back on there. It's like waving the white flag. It's disgusting. It's gross.
They could have taken the lead with a touchdown there, and that would have been just the upset of the year so far in college football. But I think what this week showed us is, yep, Georgia's really awesome, seems to be rolling along. Everybody else, like, I am not convinced that Alabama wins out. I am not convinced that Ohio State's going to win out. I noticed before the games even started today, the ESPN FPI, they showed the individual win percentage chances for Ohio State in its remaining games, and then the percentage chance to win out, and that was including today's game, was 37.9%. Mm-hmm. So just a little over a third, you know, a little over 1 in 3. So I think we are headed for a little more chaos than we realize. And you saw Michigan State lose.
I know math isn't our strength on this podcast, Andy.
Sure as hell isn't.
But yes. I would love to sit down in a classroom and have somebody explain to me how they calculate the FBI stuff.
I don't think they want to tell us. But the FBI favors certain teams. We all know that. FBI loves Michigan this year. It's a big fan of Michigan this year for whatever reason. That's the team that Ohio State has the least chance of beating, although I think it was 64% going into today. But that's the issue is Alabama played a really close game against LSU. A lot of the same issues that plagued Alabama against Texas A&M in terms of people getting pressure on Bryce Young and that offense just not being as fluid and effective as it has been, those popped up again. You know, Ohio State's offense, that was not an easy watch today. You know,
which is crazy because you would think that that's the one thing that was for certain. I think coming into the weekend, there are two things that were certain: Ohio State's offense and Georgia's defense. And Ohio State's offense doesn't seem to know what it is, and it can't run the ball on teams that should be ramming down their throat. So, you know, this is not
the Big Ten championship game last year where somebody needed to just tap Ryan Day on the shoulder and just say, "Hey, if you hand it to Trey Sermon, you guys are going to win by a lot." They couldn't just run the ball against Nebraska because they didn't think it would have if they could have.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm confident in anybody in college football, including Georgia, winning out.
No.
Because they still have to play Alabama. I mean,
Georgia's going to play. Now, here's the thing, though. Guess who's in an interesting spot now? Texas A&M ain't dead yet. Texas A&M clobbered Auburn in College Station. But Alabama, which has lost its last two trips to Jordan-Hare, which is not a perfect Alabama team, they got a win against Auburn if A&M wins out. Now, A&M's got to go to Ole Miss next week, so there's no guarantee that A&M wins out. But there's a lot of intrigue everywhere because you've got Ohio State still got to play Michigan State and Michigan. Michigan State obviously still has to play Ohio State and Penn State. Wisconsin's kind of sitting there getting better. That might be the team that comes out of the West. I mean, we saw Minnesota lose to Illinois on Saturday. I mean, we haven't even mentioned that yet, and that was a pretty big result. I think this was the most interesting Saturday of the year.
Sneaky interesting. I don't think you have that A&M upset of Alabama to kind of wrap everything around, but the question that we had a hard time answering last week seems even more impossible now. And that question is, who is number two?
Right. Who does number two work for? As Austin Powers once
who
asked.
Who does number two work for?
Yes. So that is a huge question. And well, let's get to Cincinnati. Cincinnati was everybody's pet cause last week because they were sixth place in the rankings. And six sounds about right after you barely beat Tulsa and you struggled with Navy and you weren't that great against Tulane. Like, they should have lost to Tulsa. They had the officials were helping them out by did you see the play where it's a third down play? They throw a pass to the tight end, Tulsa does. This is near the goal line. Now they can still make a first down. I think the line to gain is like the two. So they're on the six. They throw a pass that gets to like the four, and the guy gets tackled. They spot it on the six for the fourth down play. And then Tulsa doesn't get the first down. Then Desmond Ridder fumbles running a quarterback sneak. Tulsa, the quarterback could dive into the end zone and he just slide. I think he lost his footing. I don't think he meant to slide. But then the next play, or the fourth down play, the back has the ball, is crossing the plane, or is about to cross the plane, and loses the ball. Like, since he should have lost to Tulsa, they are very lucky they got, and I realize it's hard to win every game, but you keep playing like this, Cincinnati, whether it's against Navy, Tulane, Tulsa, you are going to lose when you play someone relatively good, and you are about to have to play SMU in Houston.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if should have lost is fair because they were up by eight and they at least would have extended the game. But that Ridder fumble was one of the craziest plays of the season. It was just a regular quarterback sneak up the middle to bring some room off the goal line and to put the ball on the ground there. You know, it's very interesting because let me ask you this. What do you think in a world where everything is inconsistent in how to rank these teams? You have eye test and resume, and sometimes those things add up, sometimes they don't. But what is the best way to rank your top six teams right now? Do you want to go by eye test or do you want to go by resume?
I have no idea, Ari, because I don't think there's a good way to rank them. Because I don't think anybody belongs at 2-3. It feels like everybody belongs kind of 4-5-6.
Yeah.
But you have to put somebody at 2 and you have to put somebody at 3.
You know, and there's no placeholders either, because it's like every team now that's going to be in the top four basically controls their own destiny, which wasn't necessarily the case.
Alabama is probably the one that you can kind of get away with the most, because all you have to say is, well, if they lose to Georgia in the SEC championship game, we knock them out. So,
well, you could put Alabama anywhere and it doesn't matter. So that's the thing that's right. Kind of an easy cop out there. You could just put Alabama at 2, or you could put Alabama at 9. If Alabama wins the rest of their games, including a win over Georgia in the SEC championship game, then it doesn't necessarily matter where they are. So you put them at 2.
You could also bump up Ohio State, because I think whether it's Ohio State, Michigan, or Michigan State, a one loss Big Ten champ would make the playoff. And if the Big Ten champ is a two loss team, then maybe the Big Ten doesn't make the playoff. We'll be right back after these words.
At a certain point, and we were texting about this, and I want to talk about this with you, because you said you had a good rebuttal and I want to hear what it is. But at a certain point, do we just put the teams in there that everybody knows are the four best and then just like let it happen? And if teams lose that, because it's just like we're ranking teams that we know aren't top four teams. Like, we knew Michigan State was not a top four team in America last week when they put them in the top four. And, you know, they lasted a week.
We don't know that yet, though, Ari. If they beat Ohio State, there's a very good chance they could wind up in the top four.
No, I know. But, like, you know that in your heart that they're not a top four team. I mean, they got their butts kicked by Purdue. They didn't just lose that game. They are not better than Purdue. You know what I mean? It's just like, so you think they're going to, like, maybe they end up beating Ohio State and we have a completely different discussion. You know, I'm not going to rule out Ohio State losing to anybody at this point.
That wasn't even my rebuttal, but that's a rebuttal too. But I'll give you a rebuttal. The rebuttal is the 2006 season. In 2006, we all knew, absolutely knew in our hearts of hearts, that Ohio State and Michigan were the two best teams in the country. And they played a classic game. I believe it ended 42-39. Ohio State won. And immediately the talk was, well, they should just play a rematch in the national title game because they're clearly the two best teams in the country. None of these other teams, not USC, not Florida. Let's see, who else was in the mix at that point? I think there was one other team in the mix at that point. But none of those were worthy. And if you'd watched Ohio State that whole season, you're like, well, who could play with these guys?
So do you think Michigan that Florida in 06 is a comparable? No,
I'm not done yet. Florida, which had lost to Auburn, which had barely beaten South Carolina, had to block a field goal to beat South Carolina, which struggled for a time with Arkansas in the SEC championship game. When they got put, and I was a beat writer covering that Florida team. I remember when they got put in the game, talking to the other beat writers like, these guys have to play Ohio State? They're going to get destroyed. Meanwhile, the first time the Florida coaches met to look at Ohio State film for that game, they go, we're winning the national championship. Because they knew they were considerably better. Everybody, like multiple teams they had played that year were considerably better than Ohio State. And that's the thing. That's the rebuttal. In this sport, where there's not much crossover, when there aren't a lot of data points between conferences, we don't know. That's why there needs to be a playoff where every conference is represented in a way, and there's a way to get the teams we think are the however many best in there as well, because that's the only way to figure it out, by letting them play each other.
And the thing about ranking Michigan State lower than 3 last week is that you still put them in a position where they can prove it, and then when they do beat Ohio State, if they do, then they are in that position. So I guess it's kind of splitting hairs. But here's the thing that I find the most interesting. And you and I text throughout the day as we're watching the games, and I very much enjoy it. But you'll send a text like, do we really think that Ohio State is as good as they are? Or are we sure that Ohio State's going to win the rest of their games because they're struggling with Nebraska? And on the same flip of the coin, it's like you're talking about a team that is in the top three that barely beat Nebraska already. And I think that we give middle tier teams that haven't lost yet the benefit of the doubt.
We do, results. And we prop them up and then we take the Alabamas out of the world.
The
committee does that. I think the pollsters do that. But you notice Cincinnati started four spots below where it was in the polls. The committee doesn't necessarily prop up those mid-level teams who haven't lost. They actually turn a fairly critical eye on them.
Yeah. No, I mean, maybe it's not even just the committee, but like it's just like us. Like we want, I feel like we want there to be a shakeup in the playoffs so bad that we are overly critical of the really good teams who are built to win more so than we are the middle tier teams that have happened to not lose yet. It's like Ohio State is in your crosshairs today, and they should be. Don't get me wrong. I think they should be for almost losing to Nebraska.
They're in my crosshairs, Ari, because I think it's interesting because they are rarely in the position where they are a threat to lose a Big Ten game. That's what makes it interesting.
But they're then the team that's ranked ahead of them at number three literally almost lost and almost lost multiple other times. And then that's okay to just blindly put them at three. And I think that it's fun because we want to shake up.
They weren't blindly put at three. They had beaten a team that the committee thought was number seven.
I don't know, but if I would have asked you on Tuesday, how many times if you put Michigan State on the same field as Alabama would it take for them to win? I mean, what do you think you would? I mean, we all know the answer. Like, I know that you have to play the games, and luckily for Michigan State, they're going to play the games. So we're going to get the answer eventually. But before they lost to Purdue, I think all of us, everybody listening to this podcast, you, me, would all say this team cannot beat Alabama. And the committee does that too, and I think that's fine. You know, and it's like we're going to make fun of Alabama later on this podcast for almost losing to LSU. We're going to be overly critical about Ohio State for the lackluster offensive performance they had against Nebraska. But like Michigan State,
this is your Stars Matter thing coming back, where they can't possibly be vulnerable because they have all these good players. Should I point you to the Iowa State Texas score?
Sure, absolutely. But that's not what I'm saying. My point is that we are overly critical.
This is your entire mindset. Your entire mindset is these teams are better automatically because they are better stocked. By the way,
I agree with you. Yeah, right. They're built for it.
I agree with you. But you do have to play the games. And I would like there to be a system where you have to actually play these teams, where they all play each other.
There is one.
No.
Michigan State will play them.
I'm talking about all of these. So In the 12-team system that is coming, by the way, that will come when people get over their feelings being hurt, Michigan State or Michigan, depending on which one, and Ohio State will both be in the playoff. Georgia and Alabama will both be in the playoff. Oklahoma will be in the playoff. Cincinnati will be in the playoff. Oregon will be in the playoff. They'll all be in there, and we'll get to find out who's better.
The good thing is, in the current system, there is a juggernaut in every conference but the Pac-12. So at the very least, maybe not the ACC this year because Clemson is really down. But more times than not, we always get the juggernaut.
The Big Ten doesn't look like the juggernaut. They don't. They don't look like a juggernaut right now.
They absolutely don't. But if you asked and polled 1,000 people, which team in the Big Ten is most likely to play with Georgia? The answer is not Michigan State. I don't care who you are.
No. No, you're exactly right. But they'll play each other and we'll figure it out. So,
yeah.
The good news. All of that is going to work itself out. The Oregon thing, well, I think will work itself out with a bet that I would bet I'm going to lose after watching them play again tonight. Like, they're going to have to play Utah twice. And the way Utah's playing right now, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to go.
Yeah, I think it's cool that there's a Pac-12 team out there that legitimately should be controlling their own destiny. If it gets to the point where, and I don't know if I said this last week on the podcast, but if it gets to a point where Ohio State and Oregon are directly compared to each other for the fourth spot, my opinion is firmly that protocol should take a back seat to the head-to-head and that Oregon should go. Because we talk about protocol as it pertains to the playoff all the time, right, Andy? We talk about quality wins, how sexy you look, the eye test, all the protocols. And I think at the end of the year, there's no question if Ohio State wins out and Oregon wins out that Ohio State will have a better resume. And people will anticipate that Ohio State would get chosen over Oregon as a result of that resume. But in my opinion, it should be... Protocol should take a backseat to head-to-head when it's one-on-one. Would you agree with that?
The committee gave us a hint about that this week, because you had Oklahoma State ahead of Baylor. You had BYU below Baylor. You had Oregon ahead of Ohio State. They had Mississippi State ahead of Kentucky. And so,
but this is at the beginning stages.
They honored most of the head to heads.
They honor the head to heads in the first release of the rankings. But in a month from now, if Ohio State has a win over Michigan State, Michigan, and a Wisconsin team that's winning really, really handily right now, there is the thought process, at least in Columbus, Ohio, that Ohio State controls its own destiny to get into the playoff. And my opinion is that
I don't think Ohio State is
going to have a better resume than Oregon at the end of the year. If they're being compared head to head, I think you throw everything out the window. Strength of schedule, resume, anything that you can come up with to say that they're a better team, and you should use the head-to-head result as it pertains to a one-on-one discussion about two teams if they're the last two. Does that make sense? Protocol takes a back seat to head-to-head, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, if in that scenario, Oregon will be ranked one spot ahead of Ohio State. I do think probably enough is going to shake out where they would both get in. You know, I don't think it's going to be 4 and 5. I think that's probably, you would probably wind up 3 and 4. In that scenario, but it's going to be a wild final month.
There's a lot of scenarios where they're the last two being battling to get in.
There absolutely are. And if Ohio State is mad about that, then they should have won that game. But I don't think that's as likely as them both getting in. Or the most likely outcome of this, I think, is Oregon loses again and Ohio State doesn't.
Yeah, you know, the thing that's interesting about Ohio State is that the conventional wisdom is that, hey, Ohio State is beat Nebraska. I'm not sure there's a ton of separation between Nebraska, Michigan State, and Michigan. Ohio State should be fine. They don't play anybody that good. Even if they're ranked high, they're not going to lose again. But I'm at the point with Ohio State right now where I wonder how much we've been masked by the bad teams they played in the middle of their schedule. And I don't think that any win at this point should be taken for granted of, oh yeah, of course they're going to win. If they lost to Michigan State, I would not be surprised. If they lost to Michigan, I would not be surprised. I'd be a little surprised. Okay, let's put it, but Ohio State is not the invisible team. Invincible. What is the right one? I always get those wrong.
Invincible. They mean very different things. Invisible means you can't see it.
Invincible means
it can't be beaten.
You can't be beaten. I don't think Ohio State's an invincible team. So
I would put an invisible team at number one, because how do you tackle?
How do you stop it?
Yeah. Running back?
Yeah. But like the thing that I think is most interesting here is a team that kind of was out of the viewpoint this week, and that's Oklahoma. You know, Oklahoma here is sitting at 9-1 at the 8 spot. Wake Forest is going to be dropping out of the playoff discussion, and the ACC's out now, right?
The ACC is out. Yes, Wake Forest lost to North Carolina. Now, Wake Forest, by the way, undefeated still in ACC play, because this was not a conference game. But yes, Wake Forest losing to North Carolina knocks the ACC out of the playoff discussion. So,
Can I go on a small Wake Forest tangent, Andy?
Sure, go for it.
So I had to contribute to takeaways for Sunday after the game. And I know this is a really tough time to talk to Wake Forest fans, but I just want people to know that there was supposed to be a team this year that came out of North Carolina that was supposed to make the ACC more difficult. And that team was the team that we discussed in the Tar Heels. Their over-under win was at 10. And, you know, they were recruiting at a higher level. Mac Brown is somebody who you can have confidence in a very easy way. And the team that came out of North Carolina that shook up the ACC this year was Wake Forest. And Wake Forest did that having only signed one top 60 class in the last 4 years, dating back to 2017, and the one class that was over the six or higher than 60th was 59th. And I just wanted to say that I know it's a tough day. They blew a 24 point lead on the road against their in-state rival in a non-conference game. But I think that Dave Clawson, for whatever reason, has been left out of every discussion about up-and-coming star coaches. And I know you've been on this.
Not the Andy Staples search firm.
No, but I'm just saying, like,
we sent that sucker to USC last week. We gave him the USC job.
I do think that what he has done there is absolutely remarkable. And I love that Wake Forest still controls their own destiny. Their offense is exciting, and they've done it. Like I said, I'm going to have Stars Matter tattooed on my body one day, or maybe on my tombstone when I'm long gone. But boy, am I impressed by that team. And, yeah, and they deserve a lot of credit at least be discussed on this podcast for 5 minutes for what they've done this year.
Think about this, Ari. Think about this. If you'd have told a Wake Forest fan 5 years ago, North Carolina in 2021 will start the season ranked in the top 10. They will be in the preseason top 10. And the Tar Heels will be so deliriously happy that they beat Wake Forest that their fans storm the field. The Wake Forest fan would have had you arrested. They would have thought you were insane.
I mean, I still think you're insane for saying it. Like, who would have thought?
Wake Forest is so good that North Carolina fans storm the field because they beat the Demon Deacons. That tells you all you need to know about where Wake Forest is as a program right now. They are the type of team that you get really excited if you beat because they're really good.
5,000 total students on that campus, too.
I know. It's a really great coaching job. It's a really, really great building job. You know, I've talked to Dave Clawson quite a bit about how he built that program, and they had to take their lumps at first. He told the administration when he got hired, he said, look, guys, this is going to be ugly at first because I'm going to try to redshirt every big guy I have, every offensive lineman, defensive lineman, because he felt like getting older on the line of scrimmage was the only way to eventually compete. And they got their butts kicked for 2 years before that started to work. And then once it did, you saw the improvement. And now they are one of the better teams in the ACC. Like not just for a down year in the ACC, they are one of the better teams in the ACC, full stop.
And I said on Friday that it's like we're all just waiting for Wake Forest to lose, right? Like we're just waiting for it to collapse. And I have to say now at almost 11 o'clock Central time on Saturday night after most of the games are over with, that I'm actually disappointed that the Wake Forest show's over. You know, I wanted to see how far they could go and, you know, what he could have built there. And, you know, especially considering the fact that the ACC is a very winnable conference this year. I mean, they could have legitimately won the conference this year. And I wanted to see what the committee would have done with Oklahoma, maybe as an unbeaten or a one-loss Big 12 champ. And Ohio State is a one-loss Big 10 champ. And Oregon as a one-loss Pac-12 champ, and Alabama and Georgia, and then good old Wake Forest is an undefeated ACC champion. And like, I still don't know what if there was a chance that a undefeated Power 5 team could ever be left out of the playoff. I think everybody thinks that there's no chance. I disagree with that. I think there's actually a chance. It's a shame
not
that we didn't get to
year,
see it.
Not anymore.
Yeah, no, I know. But like, even this year, if Wake Forest would have gone undefeated and won the ACC, do you think there was a chance they could have been left out?
I think there was a chance, but I think, again, we always assume, no matter where we are, that chalk's going to hold the rest of the way. And I'm telling you right now, chalk ain't going to hold. Like, the next few weeks are going to be bananas. So if Wake had gotten through this thing and somehow had gotten through undefeated, I think Wake would have made the playoff. But
yeah,
the harder part is going undefeated, which is the Cincinnati thing. Where if they finish this thing 13-0, we're going to say, well, it's very hard to go undefeated. I would argue that the playing the way they've played the last 3 weeks, they will not finish undefeated. They just won't, because somebody will get them. Now, if
I hate
they
to tell you,
improve,
but eye test is a thing, and the committee chair said it himself on Tuesday. What else does Cincinnati have? What else has Cincinnati done? And I think the answer to that question would have been different had they just been blowing everybody out like UCF did a few years ago. Like, beating Notre Dame was nice, and they're beating Power 5 teams in consecutive weeks. Indiana, unfortunately, hasn't held their end of the bargain. But the fact that they're playing these games close is really bad news for them. They need blowouts. They need to look sexy.
Mike Golic Jr. from ESPN with the best ranking I've seen so far. Here's his ranking for Tuesday night for the CFP. Number one, Georgia's defense. After that, whatever. That's it. That's the whole ranking.
I mean, here's the thing.
It's not wrong.
Do you remember in the summertime when you and I were debating about the merits of expanding the playoff to 12? And listen, I know mm-hmm. how awesome it will be if and when, probably when that happens. But I will sincerely miss podcasts like this where – you know, there's 12 teams in. Michigan State and Ohio State are going. Oregon and someone else are the teams that we're debating between all make it. I feel like the intrigue of college football is going to, we'll find new things to talk about, seeding, whatever. But there is something absolutely special about sitting here talking to you on November 6th and debating about what could happen, what will happen, who's going to be left out, who deserves to go, who's sexy, who's got the best eye test, all the things that make the sport so crazy and fun to follow. And I do think that there's going to be a little bit of a buzzkill when it comes to like November 2029 when we just, everyone makes it. And then, of course, it'll be a more fun postseason.
We'll get to see. We'll be talking about down the line. We'll be talking, you know, will it be Michigan State or Michigan making it? Like, we'll just move it down. And by the way, Michigan State and Michigan, big programs with really big fan bases who will still like listening to podcasts.
No, I know. Yeah, but I just like the idea of having that discussion as it pertains to the teams that are most likely to win it. And I'm not saying that discussion that you just mentioned wouldn't be great, but just being in complete banana land right now and having to whittle it down to four when that seems impossible, I think is a super intriguing, fun, exciting discussion. And the reason why college football is so fun to watch. And so, you know, everything it's like a puzzle you have to put together. And right now the puzzle piece is all over the place. And every week we get to flip a few over and put them in better spots and figure it out. But at the end of the year, there's going to be debate this year. I don't know if there's a way out of the tunnel where just like, okay, the final four teams that are standing here are going
to
make it.
Ari, feature, not bug. There's supposed to be debate. That's the whole point.
I know.
But I would rather have a good postseason system than debate.
Yeah. But
And again, we'll have debate with that system too. It'll just be with teams that are ranked in a different spot. That's all it is.
Having a discussion about Cincinnati right now is fun. 12-team playoff, yes. We don't have to discuss it.
I would argue that we'd have a discussion about Cincinnati right now, whether they make the playoff, but it'd be in a different, there'd be a different tone to it. It'd be, will Cincinnati or Houston make the playoff? Which one of them is going to win the game when they play? And which one of them will make the playoff? That'll be the difference in that discussion. We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. Ari, we've talked enough about the good teams. You know what all the teams we were just talking about have in common?
They're good.
They didn't lose 40-17 to South Carolina.
So I'll repeat, they're good.
40-17, Ari.
40-17. In one of the most sneaky dramatic Saturdays of the year. Leave it to Florida for being the thing that we have to talk about the most. The most pressing discussion point is Dan Mullen again losing by 100 to South Carolina.
Well, if you listened Friday, we talked a lot about what Dan Mullen said, and you know, Ari had a whole Stars Matter episode about it last week. And we talked about, you know, him getting mad about getting asked a basic recruiting, which was actually a softball question about recruiting from a fan site guy. And he got so mad that he, you know, cut everything short, canceled player availability. Boy, you really kept those guys focused with that media blackout too. You lost 40-17 to a South Carolina team that needed a miracle drive to beat Vanderbilt. That game, Ari, do you know how many yards South Carolina gained in the first three quarters of the Texas A&M game?
119.
They gained 15. Not 15 points. They gained 15 yards.
Andy,
and
where are you at?
That offense dominated Florida.
Where are you at with Mullen? You said it was going to get weird if they would have, if before the LSU game,
I said
if
it was
going to
get weird if they lost
to
LSU. Yeah.
So now where is
it? I could not have imagined this. Like, if they did, I will, to his credit, Mullen did not bring this up on his press conference as an excuse. He was asked about this and just answered the question. So I'm not saying that Mullen was trying to make an excuse out of this. This happened. A lot of Florida players had the flu. Apparently at Florida and Florida State, there were lots of players with the flu. Florida had to fly some guys up separately because they were sick. A lot of guys had IVs. They were sick. Florida State, again, had the same problem, played a competitive game against a better team than South Carolina. Florida went and laid down against South Carolina. So that's the difference. But where am I at? So here's the thing. So there was another piece of news that dropped earlier in the day that I think also has something to do with what we were talking about all week. Walter Nolan committed to Texas A&M on Saturday.
Sure did.
Number one recruit in the country. 300-pound defensive lineman. He can move really well. He had his choices narrowed down. Florida was in that mix. They were one of the schools in his final mix. He did not pick them. He picked Texas A&M. Now, again, nothing about Florida's recruiting class in the class of 2022 excites you going forward. Nothing about Florida's momentum ending this season excites you. If they play Samford next week, if they beat Samford, Missouri, and Florida State, that will excite positively no one. That will not give anybody any good vibes going into next year. And unless they pull a rabbit out of their hat recruiting, they're not going to have a recruiting class that excites people for next year. They are probably going to change if Dan Mullen is retained, which at this point we'll discuss that. But let's say he is retained. I'm assuming they change defensive coordinators. They probably overhaul their recruiting operation. So maybe that changes some stuff. Maybe some guys get flipped there toward the end. But in terms of trajectory, there's a problem. The arrow is pointing down. It is pointing due south. And this is where Dan Mullen's contract becomes a problem for Dan Mullen. Because were it a little bit differently written, were it written more like a normal buyout, then it would be very expensive right now to fire Dan Mullen versus being cheaper later. What makes it an issue for Dan Mullen now, and specifically why it's a problem for him now, is it is the same price if you fire him today. It is the same price if you fire him next year. It is the same price if you fire him the year after that. It's $12 million, $6 million up front, $1 million per year for 6 years. That does not change. So you actually probably at this point, because of the way the buyout is structured, it is probably a greater risk to keep him than to fire him.
Time's money, right?
Exactly. Exactly. The time value of money, all that good stuff. The Samford game is a noon kickoff, noon Eastern kickoff. That's going to be a lot of empty seats. I mean, that's what they have to look forward to.
I was done with, you know how we fired Scott Frost at the end of the year?
Yes.
I was now done with Mullen.
He may not
on
get fired, by the way, Ari. He has a $20 million buyout. His situation and Mullen's are different.
I'm just saying from my personal point of view, I'm not an athletic director. I'm not the one making those decisions, buyouts, money. It's much easier to spend other people's money. I'm saying when right. I fire somebody, I have lost confidence in their ability to do the job that they're in. And my confidence in Scott Frost was gone before Saturday. Kudos to Nebraska for showing a pulse. But Scott Frost, in my opinion, made a gross call that helped Ohio State win the football game. That has nothing to do with it. Their team loses inexplicably every week. Florida is a different job, is a different animal. If you have a head coach who doesn't understand the basic fundamentals of what it takes to win a national championship there, or at least doesn't appreciate the urgency of discussing it, doesn't get it. And if you don't get it, then I'm out. You know what I mean? And losing to South Carolina is going to be the exclamation point that we discuss, and we are.
Ari, remember, let me make this abundantly clear. They did not only lose to South Carolina.
No, I know.
They got
I know.
Their asses handed to them by South Carolina.
People
that
is, view
and that's different. If this was a fluky loss on some weird trick play or a fluke bounce of the ball, we're having a different conversation right now.
I do think though, as a athletic director, you have to be more seasoned to make these coaching decisions. And the understanding of the direction of your program than just wins and losses on a given schedule. Now, I'm not saying that this isn't a completely egregious loss. It certainly is. And if this is the breaking point, that makes sense. Losing to South Carolina by as much as they did has made you question Dan Mullen's ability to run the team that he currently has. But you have to look deeper about a coach's mentality, their thirst to want to recruit, which I question Dan Mullen has, and the things that are required to be Florida's head coach from a CEO understanding standpoint that he was lacking long before they lost this game. So if you want to use this game as the thing that is the last straw, then go ahead and do it. It happened. It's egregious. It's terrible. Florida is absolutely much better than that. But to me, it doesn't, I don't view it like, oh, well, they just lost a game they shouldn't have. That's it. My point is temperament, understanding of your position, and having a basic belief in the thought process and the direction that the coach has for the program. And like, if Dan Mullen were to give you a mission statement of what the next 4 years of Florida football is going to look like, I don't even know what you say. What do you say? Because if you're in his position, the only thing you do say is, we're going to recruit the hell out of Florida. We're going to get some great players into this program. We're going to develop an offensive scheme and a defensive scheme around those elite level athletes to put them in a position to beat Alabama. And we're going to do it because we've got talent all over the field. And I don't think he's humanly capable of even saying that. And it's like, that's the only answer the Florida coach can give for me to feel comfortable with them. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And that's the problem. And I don't say any of this stuff lightly, because I don't like when people get fired. I don't want people to get fired. And it's not just, you can say, oh, well, you know, you just mentioned a $12 million buyout. Yes, one person has a $12 million buyout. And then there are some other folks that are fairly highly paid. But in most of these football organizations, most of the people who are employed there are making fairly normal salaries. And even they have to turn over a lot of the time when the coaching staff changes. So these are people who have to move, have to uproot their families, have to find new schools for their kids. I mean, all of this stuff. So I'm not saying this lightly. I don't look at hirings and firings as a sport. But I'm trying to give you a realistic picture of where Florida's at right now. And with that buyout being structured the way it is, if you're Scott Strickland, the athletic director, who, by the way, was the one who made that buyout the way it was, had a chance to change it and made sure he did not change it when he extended Dan Mullen this past year, when he gave him a raise. He made sure he didn't change it. And I think he probably did that. I don't know. Scott hasn't told me exactly why he did it that way. But my guess is he probably did that because it went very sideways very quickly with Jim McElwain, and he wanted to be covered in case something went sideways very quickly. And I would argue that this has gone very sideways very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And now you have an escape hatch. So what do you do with it? I don't know. And it's something that comes up when we ever talk about Michigan too. And it's like, you want there to be a slam dunk coaching hire where if you're going to fire a guy like Mullen, who I think we all can agree for the most part has been a pretty good on the field coach, you want to have somebody that's in a position that is going to elevate your program from a confidence standpoint immediately, and there's no clear-cut candidate. So it's certainly it's so easy for us to sit here on a podcast and go, fire that guy, fire that guy. It's obviously far more complicated than that when it comes to, you know, the finances and the way that things have to go within the programs. But I'm just saying, from a personal standpoint, I would not feel comfortable as an athletic director tying my future and the program that I'm overseeing's future to the coach if he were Dan Mullen.
Well, and that's the situation. Now, you did bring up something that I think is interesting when it comes to Mullen, because there's a lot of, okay, who would you hire that's better? There's not an obvious replacement if you fire Dan Mullen. It really isn't. It's not like when they fired Ron Zook and it's like, go get Urban Meyer if you can make him choose Florida over Notre Dame. It's sort of like when they fired, or when Meyer left and they hired Will Muschamp, and when they fired Muschamp and they ended up hiring Jim McElwain, there just wasn't a really obvious choice. Mullen, I thought, was a very good choice. He was not obviously the first choice because we know they offered the job to Chip Kelly first. And I think Chip Kelly knew himself well enough to know that he did not want to recruit at a high-level SEC school, because that job is very hard. That you have to win in the SEC, you have to be the most aggressive recruiter on your staff.
Do you hear yourself?
I do.
That's the thing that Dan Mullen doesn't understand.
I know that, but I didn't realize that. And you could, there was no way to know that with him coaching at Mississippi State. He was recruiting well for Mississippi State. he got some five stars at Mississippi. Like, now Chris Jones was one where people didn't realize he was a five star until the end of the process, but they still got him. And so you don't know until that person ascends to that level whether they can recruit at that level.
The thing that Chip Kelly didn't want to...
Okay, name some coaches now who can recruit well in the SEC, who can also coach them up and have Florida competing for SEC championship.
That's a very hard exercise to put somebody on the spot on.
I'll name one right now, but I don't think they consider him.
Who?
Lane Kiffin.
I mean, I just don't... Yeah, is he back in...
But like, would Matt Campbell even take an SEC job? Would he even consider it? Would Luke Fickell even consider an SEC job? I'm not sure either one would.
It's difficult, you know, because like the thing is, that you just ironically outlined is the reason why Chip Kelly didn't want to go to Florida is the reason why Dan Mullen probably shouldn't have failed. Yeah.
But Dan had to know that himself. There was no way for the people on the outside to know that because he'd never had to try. He'd been at Florida. It's interesting. I talked to Aaron Murray about this the other day. So Aaron played quarterback at Georgia, but he's from Tampa. He was recruited very hard by Florida and recruited very hard by Dan Mullen. And so I said, Aaron, you know, when given your experience being recruited by Dan Mullen, and one of the reasons he didn't go to Florida is because he knew Mullen was going to get a head coaching job. He loved Mullen. He didn't like Urban Meyer. And so I said, you know, given your experience with him, would you have thought this guy could recruit at a really high level when he got out of Mississippi State and into Florida? And he said, yeah, absolutely. Because he was aggressive. He was really good. He said he was very upfront. And so nobody would have known that except Dan Mullen himself.
Now, here's the difficult thing about this.
As he's considering that job.
Is that the candidates themselves have to know it.
Yes, you're right.
And they have to respect the idea of, is this a piece? Am I biting off more than I can chew here?
And meanwhile, you got somebody offering to nearly double your salary. Because here's the thing. And so I will never criticize anybody for doing this because I would do the same thing. If somebody offered me a job that I knew I couldn't handle for double my salary and I knew I'd be made whole financially if I failed, of course I'd take it.
Yeah, it's just like falling backwards into a
money
thing.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't take that?
Yeah. But it's like Matt Campbell is the up-and-coming coach of the last 2 years, right? Every big-time job that opens up. But like, could we sit here and look at each other's in the and think this guy is a slam dunk, legit recruiter for Florida? I don't think I would be comfortable with that.
Or USC or
Michigan, or any of the jobs that he's...
Whoever. Yeah.
It's so, just like...
We don't know.
It's like also Dave Clawson. What Dave Clawson, I just got done saying he's awesome. Is that person equipped to run Florida? I don't know.
That's why when A&M hired Jimbo Fisher, what they were doing was eliminating variables. Could Jimbo Fisher recruit a national championship caliber roster? Yes, he could because he already had. You knew that. Could he swim in those waters? Yes, he could because he already had.
Buddy, what a great day for Jimbo.
Oh, unbelievable.
I know we were talking about that in the context of Florida, and I don't mean to change the subject, but guys.
No, go ahead.
I am
they look recruiting. Awesome.
I'm a recruiting obsessed reporter. They just got the number two overall player, probably the most valuable player in the entire country, who's currently living in Tennessee, away from Alabama, Florida, and every other program that would want him to come to College Station, Texas. And they also got another top 100 receiver on the same day. It's just like, I am buying major stock in A&M.
Well, I wouldn't leave A&M out of the discussion for the SEC championship game yet. Now, they got to go to Oxford. College game day is going to be in Oxford. I was there the last time College game day was in Oxford. Katy Perry was there. They beat Alabama. I mean, I'm not giving that game to Texas A&M by any stretch, but if they can beat Ole Miss, there's a chance that A&M is going to be sitting there rooting for the team they just beat today, hoping Auburn can win the Iron Bowl and send A&M to Atlanta.
God, A&M really let me down this year. Because they should be sitting with one loss right now and a win over Alabama. They'd be number two right now.
Yeah, if they beat Arkansas or Mississippi State, we're not even having this discussion. I mean, we're
the clear number two.
Yeah, we're assuming A&M's going to get past Ole Miss. They're maybe they can compete with Georgia in the SEC championship game, but if they beat Georgia, they're going to make the playoff. And that's not where we're at. Now, I do think if they go to the SEC championship game and beat Georgia as a two-loss team, they have a shot. But again, a lot.
You think they have a shot at being a two-loss playoff team, first ever?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess anybody who beats Georgia and Alabama in the same year probably
would give them the chance.
But
we say all this, they may go lose in Oxford next week.
Yeah.
That is not a gimme by any stretch of the imagination.
I know that one of your favorite games is to put me on the spot. Can I just put you on the spot?
Sure. Absolutely.
What's your top four right now?
Ha! Woo! Oh my God.
I mean, we're 50 minutes into this freaking thing already, you know? And it's just like,
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I guess you just leave Alabama at two.
I mean, I am.
Yeah. If you bump up Oregon and Ohio State now and drop Michigan State?
I don't know. You put Ohio State. I don't know if I'm ready to put Ohio State at four yet, but.
Well, you can't. You drop Michigan State just one spot above Michigan. You can't put them below.
So
Michigan.
Right now it's a Ohio State versus Cincinnati discussion for who's four.
It would seem so. Because who else do you elevate? There's nobody to elevate.
You can't elevate Oklahoma because they didn't play a game.
Right. You can't suddenly say Oklahoma's in. Yeah, I'm going to move you up from eight, even though I had no respect for you last week, like for who you beat.
Well, you can lose respect for teams, can't you?
You can. I honestly think that's all you can do is move up. Is leave Alabama at two and move up Oregon and Ohio State, even though neither one deserves it. Because Cincinnati's going to move up too, and they don't deserve it either.
Yeah, it's like if Cincinnati beat Tulsa 66-10, then you could make a case, right? Look at them. Right. They're playing well, but like you can't have them hop Ohio State because Ohio State looked bad against Nebraska on the same day that they came to the brink of potentially losing to Tulsa. It's just the calculus doesn't add up there. So, you know, and I'm looking at Oklahoma.
What are you doing calculus for? We can't even do arithmetic on this show.
Yeah, I was trying to sound smart. I was stupid.
I mean, it's just that there's no winning if you're the committee this week. So if I'm Gary Barta, I get up there with Reese and the folks and be like, listen, guys, watched that same stuff we watched. We don't know. We have no idea. Can we do this again in December?
Do you think anybody behind Bama could beat Bama?
Yeah. LSU's behind Bama and almost beat Bama Saturday night.
Yeah.
So,
I guess that's not the right way to phrase it. I guess the way I would phrase it would be, is there anybody behind Alabama that you would pick to beat Alabama if they played tomorrow?
No, and that's why I say leave them at two begrudgingly, because I can't think of anybody that I would put.
Is there anybody
in that spot
that is either ranked above or below Ohio State that's not Alabama or Georgia that you would pick to beat Ohio State tomorrow?
Maybe the team that already beat them.
Yeah. So, would you pick Oregon to beat them tomorrow?
If I were setting a line, no. Even though Oregon did beat them. So I'm going to give them, I feel like I'm going to give them credit for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the good news is that we have some more contact. I mean, I feel like the first playoff reveal was far more interesting than this one's going to be because we got to learn a little bit and things happened this week, but there isn't enough to shake up the top three or four.
Yeah.
Outside of moving Michigan State down.
Yeah. Michigan State's going to drop, but I don't think that's going to do anything particularly bad. Ari, I do want to point out though, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Florida in the Florida South Carolina game. I would like to congratulate the Gamecocks, but especially Jason Brown. Jason Brown is the quarterback who led South Carolina to victory on Saturday. He's a transfer from an FCS school called St. Francis. He and EJ Jenkins, who's one of their receivers, came as grad transfers this year. You think about where Jason Brown was. So Luke Doty was supposed to be the starter. When Luke Doty gets hurt, they don't automatically go to Jason Brown. They go, oh no, we got Zeb Nolan, who's a GA We're going to give him a uniform and he's going to start instead. So Zeb Dolan starts for a while. Then Doty comes back. Then Zeb Dolan replaces Doty and leads them to a miracle win against Vanderbilt. Then he gets hurt. He's ineffective against Texas A&M. They put Jason Brown in. He's finally the guy. His first start at South Carolina, he torches Florida and they win 40-17. Ari, this is Jason Brown over the summer. Not only does he do a perfect Bobby Boucher impression, he also does a spot-on Roberto Boucher impression. This guy is amazing.
He's got it all.
It's me, really. Your daddy, Roberto. I seen you on TV. They was talking about how you was going to get drafted to the NFL. I was like, I'm not going to school, daddy. I'm not going to the NFL, daddy. I'm going to stay in school. He said, what the hell with dopey? We can be like Tiger Woods and hit daddy.
How could you not root for that guy?
Did you submit your Heisman straw poll pick yet? Because I think I might have just changed mine.
No, actually, let's talk about that. I do want to talk about that. The guy who should be number one on your Heisman ballot right now. No, it's not. It is a very easy decision at number one right now. This guy was amazing tonight, and he's been great all season. Will Anderson in Alabama. That should be number one on your ballot right now based on everything that's happened so far this season. There's no one that has had as good of a year as Will Anderson to this point.
It just switches every week. Like last week, Kenneth Walker was the person of the week.
He's pretty remarkably consistent, and he was all over the place against LSU in a game where all of his team was not necessarily playing its best game, but he was unbelievable. He was everywhere.
Who do you think's actually going to win it though?
I don't know. Cause I don't think it's Bryce Young's going to have a hard time. If Walker blows up against Ohio State and they end up winning the Big Ten, I could see that. But again, that's going to be a tough one too. You know, this could be a year where the first place votes get really spread out over a bunch of guys.
Yeah. And that makes, I mean, is this the year that a defensive player could do it?
I think so. And you know, a lot of people are on Will Anderson. A lot of people are on Jordan Davis. I think Kayvon Thibodeau, I think, is not going to wind up playing enough. And the games he's playing is not great competition at the moment. He didn't get a chance to play in the Ohio State game. So I think that would have been very helpful for his case. But I do think there's some guys that are going to get legit run. I would think Will Anderson or Jordan Davis winds up in New York. I just don't know that enough people watch other than the ball to give them enough votes to win.
I mean, it's like funny because you could certainly make the case, I would, that a big athletic interior defensive lineman who can just collapse an entire offensive line by himself is the most valuable thing outside of an elite level quarterback a football team could possibly have.
And that's Jordan Davis. That's exactly right. I wrote that story where I made the case and explained, you know, talked to like Shane Beamer gave me some reasons why, and talked to a bunch of offensive linemen about trying to play against a guy like that and what that does to you from a game planning standpoint and just play calling standpoint. So absolutely. And then Will Anderson, a devastating pass rusher. Kayvon Thibodeau, a devastating pass rusher. I actually think the rank and file voter or fan understands that even better than what the big nose tackle can do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, what a crazy year, huh?
Ari, this guy just beat Florida 40-17. He played for something called St. Francis last year.
It's me, your daddy, Roberto. I seen you on TV. They was talking about how you was going to get drafted to the NFL. I was like, I'm not going to school, daddy. I'm not going to the NFL, daddy. I'm going to stay in school. He said, the hell with dopey? We can be like Tiger Woods and hit daddy.
I know. I keep playing it. I don't care.
I wish people could see
so
the video.
Great.
The video.
Oh, they can. If they're watching us on YouTube, they can.
Well, log
for those
on.
Who don't know, go to the Andy Staples Show YouTube channel, and we're posting all of our podcasts for the most part on video as well. So you can watch Jason Brown doing that. I believe he's in his underwear. I hate to say it. Don't know how else to say this, but it's sort of what happened. And wow, Ari, this this was sneakily the best Saturday so far of the season, but I suspect we're going to see a few more of these. So stay tuned. We're going to have you covered here at The Athletic. So we've switched things up a little bit. We're now dropping a podcast immediately after the ranking show on Tuesday. But before that, if you're an SEC fan, you got me and David Ubbin talking SEC football on Football and Grits on Monday. You got Power Hour with Nicole Auerbach and Michael Felder on Tuesday. Then Tuesday night going into Wednesday morning, we're dropping that reaction show to the rankings. Thursday, One True Pod talking Big 12. Friday, me and Ari talking lines, over-unders, bets, you name it. If you listened last week, we told you the over on North Carolina Wake Forest is going to hit. They will not hit the over for Liberty Ole Miss, and that's what happened. Please ignore the ones we got wrong.
Also, don't forget, Stars Matter in the premium feed on Wednesday.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Stars Matter on Wednesday. Yes, and also, if you enjoy what we do with college football, Robert Mays and Nate Tice do this with the NFL after the games on Sunday. So, same deal. In the wee hours leading into Monday morning, you can listen to Robert and Nate on the Athletic Football Show break down all the NFL games, very similar to the way we break down the college games, although there are less Waterboy impressions, and I apologize, and they're better at math. Other than that, exactly the same. Guys, this season continues to get more awesome and more interesting. I cannot wait to see what this week brings. Talk to you later.